Welcome to today's edition of the Maya Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Haley Gilley. In addition to feature reports, I'll bring you a look at regional and national agricultural news, and the show starts with a look at California agricultural news.
Early registration for the 2024 Crop Consultant Conference, hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and Western Region Certified Crop Advisors, is now open. The popular event for certified crop advisors, pest control advisors, grower applicators, and industry professionals is the mainstay for all continuing education needs this year and will take place on September 25th and 26th at the Visalia Convention Center. Visit myaglife.com/events for the early discounted rate of $275 per person, which includes the live conference, a trade show with 70 plus exhibits, first class dining, entertainment, and a mixer. We'll see you there.
Produce growers in California, Texas, Hawaii, and other states have reported vegetable and fruit damage caused by chili thrips. Chili thrips are an invasive pest first discovered in Los Angeles and Orange counties in Southern California in 2015. Scientists believe the insect originated either in Southeast Asia or in the Indian subcontinent. It is now widely distributed and poses a great danger for affected U.S. growers. Thrips mainly feed on the sap of young leaves and buds, but all above-ground parts of its host plants may become discolored by its feeding. Injured buds, fruits, and tender leaves commonly turn blackish to bronze in color. Plant damage is generally the first indication of its presence. Foliage discoloration and distortion caused by pest feeding resemble damage caused by some broadleaf herbicides. Furthermore, chili thrips cannot be identified in the field as they resemble several other thrips, including avocado and citrus thrips. This makes it especially hard for growers to become aware of an infestation. Good sanitation, such as removing weeds and old plants, can help reduce its habitat and prevent its spread. The University of California's statewide integrated pest management program advises taking suspected insects in a Ziploc bag for identification and further instruction to the local office of the county agricultural commissioner or University of California Cooperative Extension. A historically long red bell pepper market just wrapped up in Coachella, California at the beginning of March. Generally, we run from end of November to maybe February 1st if we're lucky, but this season we made it all the way to March 6th with red bell peppers. So that was exciting for us, says Garrett Powell of Peter Rabbit Farms in Coachella. No freezing weather was the reason behind the long season. The bell pepper market also stayed high enough where you could still harvest. The harvest costs were also historically high, he says, adding that the supply issues out of Mexico, following the storms that affected the season's plantings, meant that the market stayed strong enough for this California region to continue packing. With that season finished up now, there is a small supply gap, though planting for spring has already finished. Production in Coachella will begin on April 15th on green bell peppers and May 7th on red bell peppers. For Peter Rabbit Farms, acreage on both red and green bell peppers will be very similar, though overall acreage in the Coachella Valley could be slightly less than the five-year average. The planting for the spring crop is right on schedule, though. So far, I'm expecting it to be a good season with ideal weather conditions. Maybe there's a bit more wind than we prefer, though, he says. As for demand, it was good all the way through the beginning of 2024. Normally, with regular levels of supply out of Mexico at this time, supply tends to exceed demand and prices are softer. However, this year, it's been opposite of that. Looking ahead, Powell anticipates demand to pick up with the spring weather warming the country back up. It's a spring-summertime commodity, and we expect to have strong demand and good production coming from Coachella during the spring and Bakersfield during the summer, he says. Along with peppers, Peter Rabbit Farms will also be starting its Coachella eggplant season. Global demand for cotton appears to be stronger than expected. Gary Crawford and USDA Outlook Board Chairman Mark Jichanowski.
Even though the economy in China is reportedly not doing as well as some countries these days,
China's consumption of cotton remains strong.
USDA Outlook Board Chairman Mark Jichanowski says China's imports of cotton have been larger than some had expected. Meanwhile, the size of the U.S. crop is a bit smaller than expected. Those two situations may have prompted that big rally in cotton prices we saw a few days ago. But Mark says as far as USDA season average price forecast at this point in the marketing year,
the growers have about, a little bit, probably more than two-thirds of the crop marketed. So even if prices did go up a lot, the effect on our season average price forecast would be relatively muted.
In fact, USDA has left its season average cotton price forecast right where it was a month ago. No change, 77 cents a pound. That would be about 9% below last season. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Gary Crawford and USDA Outlook Board Chairman Mark Jekanowski. It has been a perfect storm in the table grape industry. Weather events in multiple growing regions have caused lower production levels and historic pricing. All of this has been going on for 6 months and resulted in an unprecedented situation. In my 35 years in the industry, I can't ever recall selling Chilean table grapes for $36 a box in February or March, says Ira Greenstein with Direct Source Marketing. I can't recall another season that was this extreme, he added. The buildup already started back in April 2023 when heavy rains from El Niño impacted the northern grape-growing region in Peru during a very critical stage of development. It resulted in a loss of an estimated 10 million cartons of table grapes from Peru, commented Greenstein. These grapes would have normally been harvested in October and November and available in the U.S. market in November and December. During this time, they can help fill the demand in the U.S. market as California starts winding down. However, even before Peru could even think of starting their 2023 grape harvest, California got hit by Hurricane Hilary in August 2023 during their growing season. Hilary damaged a significant portion of the California table grape crop with a final loss of just over 18 million boxes. Typically, there never is a gap between the end of California season and the beginning of Peru's season, shared Greenstein. However, these two weather events caused 28 million boxes to be completely taken out of the pipeline and left in the U.S. market considerably short supplied in November and especially December of 2023. Following Peru's table grape harvest is Chile, and growers came into an empty market as well. With a late start, lower production levels than normal, and no competition from other growing regions, table grape prices held at historic levels exceeding $35 a box on the spot market. Both production levels and pricing of Chilean table grapes are in big contrast with last year. In 2023, Peru and Chile overlapped, resulting in depressing pricing ranges from $16 to $24 per box. On the production side, Chile harvested 64 million boxes of grapes last year, while the number looks closer to 58 million boxes this year. The country has been replacing older grape varieties with new varieties, and the transition takes time, said Greenstein. Chile projected a crop of 65 million boxes, but will likely finish in under 60 million. At the end of the day, we have seen a perfect storm play out since September, and we can expect to see the current supply situation remain somewhat unchanged through the balance of March, Greenstein concluded. The volume of raspberries is snug right now. It's less than previous seasons, and overall raspberry conventional volume is about 25% less than last year, according to USDA data. Right now, Mexico is the major supplier of fruit for the U.S. market. The season started about 2 to 3 weeks later than usual for several reasons. However, weather always plays a primary role, especially when regarding the start of the season. Along with Mexican production, California South is producing very little in raspberries. This region's strongest production is generally between week 17 to week 42, though smaller volumes can continue to week 52. Right now, there are two standard raspberry offerings in the market, the 6-ounce and the 12-ounce clamshell, although increasingly and particularly in club stores, larger 18-ounce clamshells are also available. As for demand, raspberries have become more available in the last several years. Consumption and demand are growing as more people are finally tasting and buying raspberries. They are a great tasting fruit, ready to eat, no peel, and everybody likes the beautiful red tasty fruit. It is the perfect sweetness with a touch of acidity that hooks people. This is all leaving pricing on the stronger side with the shorter volumes, and pricing has been higher, especially in the past 3 to 4 weeks. Looking ahead, volume is expected to become more available as the spring crop gets started, and thus prices will adjust down to the market volume and availability.
Almond growers and PCAs have a new online tool at their disposal to assist with budgeting an integrated pest management program for navel orangeworm. It comes in the form of a cost and benefit calculator that allows users to explore how changing from their current IPM program may impact profitability in almond production. UC Davis economist Brittany Goodrich and colleagues developed the tool.
I was thinking a lot about navel orangeworm management and these different IPM programs. And a lot of times we think about, navel orangeworm management as like separate things. Like we have pesticide application, we have winter sanitation, you could maybe use mating disruption. But I thought it was really important to recognize that you really put all of those components together to control that navel orange worm and those damage rates at the end of the year. And so I wanted there to be a tool for growers to be able to compare the costs of an entire IPM program with the corresponding benefits that would come out of it. So for example, maybe if you use mating disruption in addition to whatever you're currently using for an IPM program, you're going to reduce your damage rates. And that makes, you know, a difference for your marketable yield that actually gets processed at the handler. And then also a lot of times you end up getting premiums for having higher quality nuts. And so I wanted there to be a tool that growers and PCAs could use to actually, you know, compare those economic costs and benefits. Because I think last year we saw a little bit of this where growers were really concerned about, you know, the low prices of almonds. And I think we really cut back on some winter sanitation and we saw the consequences of that. So we really need to be aware of thinking about these things. I always say, you know, we need to think about it as profit maximization, not necessarily cost minimization, right? So you have to, sometimes you have to spend more, but it has more benefit in terms of yield and that reduction in damage rates.
Goodrich said she tried to make the tool as simple and accessible as possible for growers and PCAs to use, noting in some regards it might even seem too easy to use given the value of the information it's providing.
They're going to input a couple of basic inputs. So, you know, what the expected price of almonds is going to be at harvest, and what an expected yield is going to be for that almond orchard that you're thinking about. And then you can go down a little bit and you can input your actual costs of all of these different IPM practices. So we have a slot for winter sanitation. The current amount that we have is right about $300 an acre. For kind of a baseline level, but folks that know what their winter sanitation costs can plug in their own costs. We have a slot for mating disruption. So if you're paying for mating disruption, and then a slot for how much you're paying for pesticide applications. And again, each of those, we have sort of these baseline values that we've just plugged in as examples. But then if growers know their own costs per acre or they want to edit our costs that we have that spreadsheet, like I said, and then in the spreadsheet, you can get down to, you know, what your cost of labor per hour is if you want to edit that from what we had, or, you know, the number of hours per acre you're running your tree shaker or your sweeper blower. You can get into all of those different things. So essentially you plug in all of these costs, and then you also, so you plug them in for, like you said, a current IPM program. And then the idea is that you'd think about what you're currently doing and then maybe consider, you know, adding something or changing something about your IPM program, whether that's adding mating disruption, adding another pesticide application, taking away a pesticide application, something like that. And then, so then you also have to input what you would expect your damage rates at the time of harvest to be for those specific IPM programs. So maybe traditionally what your damage rates have been using one IPM program, and then if you think you can lower them a little bit using this new IPM program, you'd plug in that different damage rate. And so then those are the inputs that you plug in. And then what the calculator does is, using those damage rates and that initial expected yield that you entered, it calculates your expected marketable yield. So obviously if you have higher damage rates, you're going to lose more of that expected yield. And then it also calculates a premium quality discount, or it calculates a premium or deduction for quality related based on your damage rates. So, and this is something that we took from Blue Diamond's 2023 crop delivery schedule. So it's taken straight from Blue Diamond. And so then, based on those IPM practices and your expected rejects, you have a certain almond price per pound that you're getting, a certain yield, and then you can compare, the calculator compares, you know, which one is going to get you the higher total expected net revenues based on those two IPM programs. So you can kind of, yeah, alter things a little bit. If you think your damage rate's going to be lower or higher with one program or another, you can plug those in and see what happens to that total expected net revenue.
Goodrich said she has plans to replicate the tool for pistachio and walnut growers and PCAs. The process of entering data and using the calculator would be close to identical.
I think it would be as simple as you just select the crop that you are wanting to look at. It would be almost identical across these three crops. It would just have, you know, slightly different, costs of pesticide application, maybe like the initial baseline values, but then also you'd have the different premium and discount quality schedule. So we'd obviously have to update that from the almond schedule to some other pricing schedules, which I believe we have for, I think, both crops. We have a couple for both crops at this point. The idea is that we do want to expand this to the other two tree nut crops, and that's a work in progress, but we wanted to start out with one and make sure we kind of had things working correctly and make sure it was a useful tool before we kind of expanded it to those other crops.
For more information on the tool, link to it is down in the episode description below. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Charlstrom.
My Ag Life is brought to you by ICL Growing Solutions, a leading global fertilizer manufacturer and exclusive miner of polyhalite, marketed as polysulfate. Learn more about ICL's cutting-edge crop nutrition solutions at icl-growingsolutions.us.
The administration has announced major actions to enhance integrity and fairness in the food industry and in the banking industry. Gary Crawford has more on this edition of Agriculture USA.
Are some companies using illegal and unfair tactics to keep prices high and stifle competition? President Biden believes they are and has launched a major government-wide campaign to do something about it. And we'll hear more about this on this upcoming and totally fee-free edition of Agriculture USA. I'm Gary Crawford.
Capitalism without competition isn't capitalism, it's exploitation.
We've heard the president say that many times, including a couple of years ago when he created a Competition Council, a group of top administration officials with the mission of increasing the level of competition in many key industries. And then just a few days ago, President Biden and members of his Competition Council announced an escalation of that effort.
No matter how much money you make, no matter how rich or poor or middle class you are, you don't like being taken advantage of. That's why today I'm launching a new strike force on unfair and illegal pricing to crack down on companies who break the law while keeping prices high for American consumers.
To hold companies accountable when they engage in unfair and illegal practices that keep prices high.
An important next step in a fight against unfair and anti-competitive pricing.
Be it in the grocery store or at the pharmacy.
So this is very, very popular with farmers.
It's going to increase competition and put billions of dollars back in the pockets of American families.
That last voice belongs to Rohit Chopra. He heads up the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and he says one of the first changes we consumers will see in this effort will be on our credit card bills.
We're finalizing this rule that will lower the typical late fee charged by big credit card issuers from $32 down to about $8 in most cases, an average savings of $220 per year for the more than 45 million people who are charged these fees.
Now let's go to see what's happening in the food and agricultural side of this. First on food labels, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says right now there's confusion about exactly what the phrase product of the U.S. means on a meat and poultry product label. The same with claims about how the animals were raised. But Vilsack says,
we're very close to publishing a final rule that aligns the product of the USA label with consumer understanding of what that claim means. We're working on label standards and verification guidance for claims such as animal raised practices so that consumers can trust those labels.
Meanwhile, more on the competition front. The Packers and Stockyards Act, first passed way back in 1921, prohibits discrimination, deception, and retaliation in contracts and other dealings in meat and livestock buying and selling.
And this final rule will provide for a clear, more effective standard by which to govern all of this in the marketplace.
Agriculture Secretary Vilsack announced on a Zoom hookup with reporters a final rule under the Packers and Stockyards Act designed to help even the playing field for livestock producers in their contract dealings with large consolidated meat packers.
It's going to help producers receive protection against packers, swine contractors, and live poultry dealers who may be trying to terminate them on a pretext. For example, claiming that a poultry termination is on animal welfare grounds, or perhaps refusing to deal someone because they say their cattle quality is poor when it's not.
Vilsack later told a meeting of the President's Competition Council that the new rule, along with other steps the USDA is taking, will enhance market integrity and transparency and will help protect producers against unfair practices, to which President Biden asked,
"What kind of a response you're getting from farmers?"
Vilsack's answer?
"Mr. President, they welcome these changes. For far too long, they felt that they were at the mercy of a relatively small number of integrators and processors. So to the extent that they now have more options to be able to process their cattle at local and independently owned processing facilities, some of which are farmer owned, to the extent that they know that they have a balanced playing field, that they understand better who they're doing business with, they understand that they have certain rights, that they can in fact seek a better deal. All of that, I think, is something that's been very much desired in the marketplace across all farm groups and across all associations. So this is very, very popular with farmers."
And Vilsack said USDA is working on a couple of other rules that will also boost competition in the livestock market, aligning with President Biden's view on that subject.
"Capitalism without competition isn't capitalism, it's exploitation."
This has been Agriculture USA. I'm Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington.
Farmers who had been denied federal loans won only 17% of appeals in the USDA's National Appeals Division, according to new analysis by the Center for Agricultural and Food Systems at Vermont Law and Graduate School, with partners FarmAid and the Rural Advancement Foundation International. The report analyzes National Appeals Division cases concerning direct farm ownership and farm operating loans between January 2009 and July 2022, spanning 14 years, three farm bills, and three presidents. USDA Farm Service Agency offers have significant discretion in approving or denying loans, says Emily Spiegel, Senior Research Fellow at the Center for Agricultural and Food Systems. But these numbers show that initial process is incredibly important to get right, because farmers have little chance of getting a better outcome when they appeal. The report, Appealing for Relief, an analysis of appealed direct farm loan decisions 2009 to 2022 and opportunities for reform, shows that the agency has wide discretion that could lead to different outcomes for similar situated farmers in the loan approval process. It also reveals that farmers with innovative and non-traditional operations often face more barriers to a successful outcome. The Farm Service Agency may use inaccurate information to assess the feasibility of farm plans for these operations. The USDA is a lender of last resort, so often farmers have no other options, said Spiegel. Farmers who are successful in their appeals often go through the appeals process and win, only to have their loan denied for an entirely separate reason. This can lead to successive appeals, prolonging the time that farmers wait for vital assistance. Opportunities for reform exist at every step of the appeals process, authors say. We are hopeful that USDA will improve the process for farmers, leading to fewer upheld denials, less opportunity for discrimination, and unpredictable outcomes and more transparency, said Jennifer Fahey, Communications Director at FarmAid.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Reports. I'm Haley Gilley. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.